Hey, everybody. It's so great to be with you today. I'm excited to be with you from Spring Hill, Tennessee. That's where our daughter Andrea lives with her husband and her three children, which, of course, are our three grandchildren. So we've had a magical few days here, reinvesting in our childhood and eating all the stuff that I don't usually get to eat. But I'm excited about our topic today. We're going to be talking about five practices that produce a really strong and healthy leadership culture in your local church. And it's something we have to do well if we're going to fulfill the dream God's put in our heart. I have two young leaders with me today who are going to be sharing, one who's led a very, very successful revitalization in the last few years. In addition, they planted three churches, just been fantastic. And another who spent 5 years with us at Faith Family Church, and he's preparing to plant a new church in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So, guys, welcome. Thanks for taking time. Yeah.
Stoked to be
Good to
here.
be. Good. So, Jason, let me start with you. Take a minute and just tell us what you've been up to the last few years.
Yeah, so my wife Jenny and I, we moved to Garden City, Kansas in June of 2021. We took over Cornerstone Church, which at that time was 37 years old. We just celebrated 40 years as a church this last September, and God's been moving. When we took over, it was post-moral failure, pastor with worship pastors, messy situation, not simple, definitely not the ideal situation to walk into. Church was decimated, was pretty close to shuttering its doors, honestly. You have a little bit of hindsight now. You can see how desperate the situation was, but God's blessed it. We've exploded. We are not just growing here at the church in Garden City, but like you said, we've planted. And so there's two other churches that are active. Church number four in Dodge City launches November 3rd. So we're 10 days, I think, out from our soft launch. It's taking place in Dodge City. And so we can't wait to see what God's going to do there. It's just been a special time. God's blessed. It seems like all of our hard work and labor has been rewarded pretty greatly.
Yeah, well, my brother coached at Lawrence, Kansas. So I've got a little heart for Kansas. I'm excited about
Yeah.
what's happening across the state with you guys. Jeffrey, what's up?
Not much, man. It's good to be here. I worked at Faith Family Church in Victoria. Fall of 2019 is when I started as a youth and young adults pastor. And man, I look back and I often miss that season. It was a great time. I had a blast. Eden and I stepped into a youth program and a young adults program. And by the grace of God, they both grew. But more than them growing, the thing I'm probably most proud about of all of that experience is just the people that came out of it. It's so cool to look at students that are now in college or are in high school now, but they're still serving God, loving God, being lights at their school. It's cool to see on Instagram the team that was built and they're still all together forming community, all of that. So I loved that little 5 year stint where I got to lead the next gen at Faith Family. And now Eden and I felt a call to go plant a church. So we're gonna go try to build something again. And it's only gonna work again by the grace of God, but we are excited for it.
Yeah, well, you should be. And that was Jesus' whole plan to reach the world, right? Who he left behind. That was the whole deal. It's kind of what we're talking about today. I'm the old guy who's going to bring perspective from the old guy chair today. Just celebrated our 35th anniversary as pastors. And here's what I'd just say. Man, one thing I've learned is just don't take leadership for granted, because it is one of the three things I think that are essential to seeing kingdom momentum in what God's called you to. Number one, is the word of God. You got to practice the principles in the word of God. And some people, I think especially people who at one day they had momentum because of maybe a reformational movement, maybe it was a word of faith movement, maybe it was some other movement you jumped on and you thought, well, I had momentum and I've lost it now. It's because we got to go back to the word and find our momentum there, not just find momentum in part of a movement. The second thing is Holy Spirit empowered prayer. I don't care how smart you are, Jesus is going to save glory for God. And so prayer is just essential, that it's the Holy Spirit who's doing whatever he's doing in your life and in your ministry. But then the third thing is good leaders. And if you don't raise up good leaders, you're going to have great thoughts, you're going to have great intentions. But it's leaders who fuel momentum and sustain momentum in the life of the church. That's why, according to Barna Research, 16% of people are gifted with a leadership capacity. Not everybody can do it, but God put grace in the souls of about 16% of your people. And that grace needs celebrated. That grace needs affirmed. That grace needs nurtured well if it's going to fulfill the purposes that God put in people's soul for. So we're going to talk about that today. First, real quickly, I want to welcome our new members, the Significant Church, Pastor Paul Allen from Transformation Church in Indian Land, South Carolina, Pastor Eddie Brewer from Capitol Hill Assembly of God, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Pastor Don Browning, your neighborhood church from Battle Creek, Michigan, Pastor Jerome Davis from Kingdom Christ Church, Lillington, North Carolina, Pastor Warren Gilpin from Mount Zion Baptist Church, Tappahannock, Virginia, Pastor Cody Johnson from Mount Pisgah Church in Greensboro, North Carolina, Pastor Robert Oliver, Bible Baptist Church from Hooksett, New Hampshire, Pastor Casey Schimfessel from First Baptist Church, Tomball, Texas, Pastor Mike Thomas from The Torch Church in Demorest, Georgia, Pastor Mark Walker from Kingdom Empowerment Ministries, Rock Hill, South Carolina, Pastor Jason Aldu from Life Changing Church, Rodaport, South Africa, Pastor Samuel Biswas from Believers Care Church in Dhaka, Bangladesh, Pastor Martin Reese from Life in the Nations, from the United Kingdom, and Pastor Ivan Bourbano, Rescuing the Families Ministries in Santo Domingo, Ecuador. So, Jeffrey, how many of those names do you think I messed up? Can you give me a guess?
Hey, if you're in the MLB, you'd be in the Hall of Fame. You're at least one for three.
Anyway, so we just want to welcome all you guys. And then if you're new, we want to let you know the Significant Church is a network that's led by pastors. And it's really about pastors who love serving together, their fellow pastors, their families, and their teams. And we love watching pastors come out of isolation into relationships where they're invested into in a way that causes them not just to reach their dreams, but to exceed their dreams. And that's happening like crazy at Significant Church. So we just invite you guys to be a part of it. Want to give one quick shout out to Pastor DJ Rob and his wife Dottie. And they're up in Washington, and they are amazing. They've been married for 31 years, high school sweethearts, but they've done everything. They were children's pastors, youth pastors, marketplace ministry leaders. Now they have a great church, and they love doing nothing more than bringing pastors together. So if you're in the Washington area, I want to encourage you to check them out. They are incredible. So, hey, guys, we're going to talk about nurturing, sustaining leaders. And here to me, I'm going to take it through five steps. And I want us to pretend that we are just in day one of our leadership. That's why I wanted two guys I believe, couldn't believe more in to be with me on this show today. And then I'll speak to it from the perspective of seasons change. You know, you're not wearing three-piece suits anymore. The music's changing. So how do you continually develop and sustain leadership in the life of a church? And here's the first thing for me. Aspect one is successful leaders exhibit what breeds trust in the lives of the people. And I think that's the beginning point, whether you're a new leader or whether you're trying to sustain leadership in your church. I've seen a lot of people who have great ideas, even some decent leadership capacity, but they don't focus enough on creating buy-in. And so the plan lacks the personnel that's needed to bring that plan to pass. And that's why when I took over a church 35 years ago that needed to revitalize, one of the best pieces of advice I got was this: preach the best you can for the first couple of months and get to know the people before you start talking about what you want to change. And if you change things too slowly, dysfunction lives on. So you can't change things too slowly. But if you change things too fast, what happens is people feel attacked instead of feeling affirmed. And that'll sabotage everything that you're trying to do as a leader. So what we did is we had the best weekend and Wednesday services I was capable of leading. Then on Sunday nights, I'd invite people to hang out with my wife and I. And I saw how important being a person who didn't take others for granted was, because what happens is you start bonding with people when you hang out with them. And buy-in happens because the people are now convinced, hey, he cares about me. He knows what I'm hoping for in my heart, and he's doing his very best to lead me into that. And that's just not a step that you want to take for granted as a leader. So here's my advice. First, listen to the hearts of the people that you want to lead. And then number two, cast vision in a way that shows them why your plan is going to fulfill the passions that are in their heart. And I'll just share these vehicles for doing what I just described with you. How do you listen well? How do you cast vision well? Number one, just pastoral meetings or hookups. Just have some food after church and just meet with people who are in your church. Get to know them. Use what I call the VNO, 3 minutes during every service. Just talk about why they would miss your church and why the community would miss your church if you didn't do the things that you're doing. And then I'm a big believer in monthly leadership gatherings. I used to have them every month when my church was small. Now at the size we're at, I think it's better to let departments meet monthly and maybe the overall church meet quarterly. But it takes time and focus to nurture leadership. And to me, the first step isn't sharing what you think everybody needs to do. It's slowing down, exhibiting trust, and creating buy-in. So, Jason, what do you have to say to that?
Yeah, I totally agree. John Maxwell, you know, he talks about the five levels of leadership. And before they'll ever follow you because of production, they'll follow you because of permission. You know, they like you. They just follow you because they like you. And they need to have a little bit of fun with you before they get things done with you. So I always end up saying it.
That's good. I got my phone here. I got to take my notes. I like that.
Well, so when Jenny and I took over the church, we spent 3 nights a week with about 4 couples every night coming into our home, just having dinner with us.
Yeah.
I mean, it was exhausting. I mean, I don't want to repeat that season ever again, but it was critical for them to know us, know our heart, see our home, like us. So then they would be willing to follow us into battle. You know, I mean, they needed to like us and have fun with us before they wanted to get anything done with us. Yeah.
That's awesome. Are you an extrovert, Jason, by nature?
Yeah, pretty extremely.
You are.
But that took me to the level. That took me to my extremes, for
sure.
What
would you say to somebody who's more introverted? Like if you were coaching somebody who's more introverted, what would you say to them?
Jenny, my wife Jenny, is extremely, not extremely. She would be, you know, if a 10 was an extrovert, I would say she's like a 4. So it exhausts her. It takes energy from her. But, you know, there's just some things that have to be done. You know, those initial moments of things. And then you can fall more into a healthy rhythm, you know, because it was an unhealthy rhythm at first. But we had a plan from God that had to be accomplished. And we needed those people that were a part of 37 years of the church up to that point to be on board with the changes we were going to be making to make the church healthy and growing again. So I, you know, hindsight, would I do it all over again? Absolutely. I wouldn't. Do I want to repeat that season though? Absolutely. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Well, you did it smarter than I did it. We kind of did the same thing. I used Sunday nights because I didn't want to preach 2 messages. You guys didn't grow up in the Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night phase of, you know, preparing 3 messages every week in addition to leading your church, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't want to prepare a third message, so I use Sunday nights. But that's really, I remember you doing that. And that was for a revitalization, they didn't have a lot of trust. You were following a moral failure. Yeah. You were following somebody who's probably this is me saying it, not you, if anybody who knows your church is watching. So, but for me, you followed somebody who probably had a really good heart and the world changed around him and he didn't have a philosophy of ministry to meet the challenge of that world. And so people like that get cynical, you know, is the plan this guy brings us, is it even going to work? And so they're like you to give you a chance in that setting. So that was,
yeah. I was the third pastor in 5 years. So there was a lot of cynicism and skepticism. It was very real.
Yeah. And I talked to before they hired you. So I felt some of the cynicism and the skepticism that was involved in that. Jeffrey, how about you? You served in a really tough church. I mean, I don't even know how you make it now.
No, first of all, I just want to say I'm trying to take notes over here too, talking about what y'all did to get these things off the ground because I haven't done it yet. But it did kind of remind me whenever I took over student ministries, the first thing you told me to do is every Wednesday meet with some of the core leaders and have dinner with them. So I think I did that even with some of the core leaders just in the youth group because they didn't know me and I was about to, you know, make some pretty good changes. But I had a professor tell me this in seminary. He'd open up the class. It was a leadership class. Every time he'd say the same thing, he'd say, "Leadership begins with listening." And he would make us say it back. "Leadership begins with listening." Yeah. And I was, you know, a very inexperienced leader at the time. So I think, honestly, in my head, I'd kind of roll my eyes and be like, yeah. Like, we got to get stuff done. And then I actually led. And I realized, man, it's true. As a leader, you got to inspire people to something. But people are not going to feel inspired and ignored at the same time. And so if they're not going to feel ignored, that means, you know, you're going to have to listen to them. And yes, you're going to have to change stuff. But he also said this in the class. He said, "You're going to change stuff and it's going to fail people's expectations." But he said, "The job of the leader is to fail people's expectations at a rate they can understand." That's kind of like what you said, Dad. Like, when you're trying to change it too fast, they don't feel affirmed. So he would say, "You're going to have to fail people's expectations, but fail them at the rate they could understand." And then he'd always say this. He said, "Because the biggest lie you can believe is that people fear change." So people don't fear change. They change their hair all the time. Styles change. They want to change their car out. People change all the time. People don't fear change. He said, people fear loss. And so whenever you're making a change, you just have to motivate people to help them see, we're going to make the change, but it's not a loss. And here's why. And of course, all of that is done on the foundation that I've already listened to you. And I'm kind of like hearing and receiving what you're saying as well. So I just, you know, it's kind of my two cents. I think 100% I can say now, I agree that leadership begins with listening.
Yeah. I mean, if people don't feel affirmed, they're not going to go on if they don't get along. I think that's the John Maxwellism too. You know, people got to get along, go on. And that's just, you know, well, let's go to number two. Successful leaders engage the right leaders. And to me, as I was preparing this, I tried to think of things that were critical. I tried to go back to day one as a leader and think about where if you made a mistake, you were going to pay for that mistake, you know, and you're going to regret that mistake. And just for Jeffrey, yes, I did come up with 5 E's. You know, I like alliteration, right? So when possible, it helps people remember things. So the Thesaurus and I are very good friends. I try to do that. But good leaders, you know, they have a grace about them. You can recognize when somebody's a leader, just like you can recognize when somebody's empathetic, right? It's a grace that's in somebody's soul. And so they're naturally skilled at things like vision casting, keeping people on board, keeping things organized. And Jeffrey, you know this, but when we prayerfully engage a leader, we evaluate them through three different filters that we'll talk about. The first one deals with their leadership style. And so we have things that when we're considering bringing somebody in the team, first, does this person feel called here? And if so, for how long? And I've had a lot of people say, man, and Jason, I'm sure you did too at your dad's church. We want this to be our last gig. We want to finish ministry here. And you're thinking, well, you know, can you build the momentum? Can you keep the resonance? Because I've had a lot of people say they want this to be their last gig, you know. But we evaluate even in the you know, evaluation stage. If they jumped around a lot and they didn't stay until they succeeded at the last place, they probably struggle with really knowing how to handle the call and fulfilling what God's called them to do. The second thing we address is competence. How skilled are they at teaching, vision casting, administration, personal care? We don't hire anybody on staff who doesn't want to be a leader because we're a team building place, but then they also have a competence. It might be AVL, might be video production, might be accounting, whatever expertise we're engaging. We ask, are they competent as leaders and are they competent at what they do? The third thing we examine are character issues, and nobody's perfect, but people of integrity walk securely. You know, when people mess up, they mess up everything that the people around them are trying to build to, whether that's a family or a ministry. So integrity is really, really important. And then the final thing we evaluate is chemistry. Will they motivate everybody who's around them, or will people feel like they just have to put up with them, you know? And you don't always get all four. So if you're just going to evaluate, but purposely, we try to develop all four of those. And then we go from leadership style to leadership skill. And the best book I've ever read personally, I think, on leadership. I had the chance one day to spend the day with the guy who develops all of our leaders at West Point, all the cadets. And so we had a chance to talk leadership for the whole day. And I asked him, what's the best book you ever read? And he recommended this book I'll tell you about. It's called Primal Leadership. And the guys he develops have to have an instinctual leadership that if people are in war, they have to want to follow you because of the kind of leader you are. And the book talks about six skills that we have kind of modified to the ministry setting. Number one, is this person a good example? Do people just like who they are? Number two, are they visionary? Do people get excited when they open their mouth? Number three, are they directors? Do people appreciate how detailed their plans are before they go to war? Number four, are they good recruiters? Do people feel valued by this person? Number five, are they a good coach? Do people appreciate how they keep bringing more potential out of them? And then number six, are they a good friend? Do people know they care even more about me than what they want to do with me or what they want me to do for them? And so we evaluate somebody based on their leadership style, their leadership skill. And then we look at their personal style and we evaluate strength finders, Myers-Briggs, working genius, Enneagram, disc tests. There's all kind of great. A lot of those things didn't exist when I started, but they are great for helping people work together. But, you know, every winning coach knows that getting the right people on board is vital. Because you can't win with the wrong players. There's just no way to do that. So, Jeffrey, what would you want to add to that?
I think mostly just the more you are aware of people's strengths, the better you can coach them. I heard somebody say this, and I thought it was kind of simple but insightful. They said, you would never draw up a play in sports, like some offensive play, without knowing what kind of players you have. But sometimes, you know, we can draw up all these strategies and ministries without looking at the players that are actually on our staff or on our roster. You know, it's just, if you got Shaq or Jokic on the floor, you're drawing up a different play than if you got Steph or Clay. You know what I mean? Well, we can tend to like draw up these different scenarios of what we want people to do. And I think the flip side of that is if you already know the play you want to run, that's good. Just make sure you hire people that are able to run that play. That way you're not going to have a 3-point shooting contest, but you hired Shaq and now Shaq feels like he's a horrible player because he's just in a bad system. At the end of the day, you know, it's kind of know before you go and know before you grow. So self-awareness I think is so important. And, on the strength finders, they say something kind of interesting. They say that your top 10, if you don't know what strength finders are, there's 34 different strengths you can have. They say your top 10 might change at any given moment. But like your bottom, I think it's like the bottom 15, like, man, don't even, you're probably just never going to be good at it. Like it's just never going to happen. If you want to know, my 34th one is flexibility. I am structured. I like a routine. I am not good when it's like, oh, we don't know what we're doing and be flexible and on your toes. I'm not good at it. If that was like my primary thing I had to do in my job, I would be absolutely awful at it. So I think it's just important to know like, okay, if I'm going to be doing something, then the bulk of what I'm going to be doing is in my wheelhouse. And that's easier to coach and it's easier to play. Whenever you're actually getting to do what God really created you to do.
Yeah, I still have bitterness in my soul over the 3-point line coming into basketball after I was done playing. The big guy got way too many shots back in my day. So anyway, yeah, but that's really, now you're raised by a mom who is flexible. So
yeah,
and value flexibility. Like we'd all like be amazed at what she could do that way. But, what you're saying is,
well, Eden's like that. Eden, yeah. Can do, you completely drop a bomb on her that restructures her whole day and she doesn't skip a beat. She's like, okay, I'll just do it later. I'm like, how do you do that? I can't do that. That just makes me mad.
You can't stretch very far either. Got some bad genetic gifting in that area. So, Jason, how about you? What do you want to say?
Oh, I'd kind of echo two of your thoughts. Use another Maxwellism. He says everything rises and falls on leadership. But to echo one of the thoughts you had, I would say leadership rises and falls on integrity. So for us, I've been blessed, obviously, to get to be around a lot of different great churches, plugged into kind of the church, capital C. And the problem I'm seeing with the church today is we've elevated giftedness many times at the expense of righteousness. And our culture loves to worship talent. There's like 27 different shows on right now that celebrate how good a person can talk loud. We call that singing, they can talk loud. Let's put them on primetime television. And so we worship talent, and the church is supposed to worship the giver of the talent, not those who God gave the talent to. Yeah, and so I'm watching as the church continues to elevate, and really instead of being, in the world, but not of the world, we are co-opting the world's culture, which celebrates talent. And man, I worry about those things. And so for us, as Cornerstone Church, I'm looking for people whose yes is yes, whose no is no. Our leadership pipeline is pretty rigorous. It's not meant for those who are kind of teetering. There's a spot for everybody in the church, dream teams, there's going to make some sacrifices. But to be a leader, that pipeline is pretty rigorous. It's tough. It's not simple, because we want to make sure they are people of integrity, that their yes is yes and that their no is no, before we elevate them into a position of leadership. The second, and you kind of said it what was the book called, Pastor Jim? Primal Leadership. I'd add a fifth C to your four Cs. Your four Cs. I'd add a fifth C to that, and that is charisma. I think, one of my favorite little sayings is, if it fails to inspire, it'll surely expire. That I'm looking for people who've got the zeal of the Lord, that just are running with a joy. The joy of the Lord is our strength. So if they have a joy and a zeal about their life, that is a marking thing, because it's kind of rare. If you think about, especially, Gen Alpha, Gen Z, they're kind of mopey. They can be a little bit sad. Like, they can be a little bit low key, right? Everything is for them, use some of their language, mid, right? There's so much of that. So for somebody to be excited and passionate and, zealous for the things that God is doing in the world and in their life. Oh, that's like for that culture, they love that. They want that. They just don't necessarily know how to access that. So when one of their friends is that way, it's like a mosquito to the blue light. They're the blue light, and they all just gravitate towards that person. So, man, charisma is so powerful. I say this to my church guys all the time. People are more likely to catch your mood than to catch a virus. So that charisma that we have as leaders, man, we need to be the most excited people about the vision of our teams and then of our church. So charisma is just an essential ingredient to this thing we're talking about right now. It's critical.
Yeah, now I have five C's. That's so next time you hear preaches, Jason, I'm going to have five C's.
You don't have to give me any credit, because I stole it.
Well, I will. I'll give it to you. I like you. So at least for the first two or three times.
That's right.
I'm gracious, right? Most people, you're lucky to get it one time. So, okay, let's go to the third thing. So just, again, we're talking about stepping into a new situation where we're leading, or trying to renew a wineskin within our church. So we exhibit what brings trust. We engage the right people. And then the third thing, and you kind of hit this, but you got to enthuse hearts. I mean, people aren't robots. They're not machines. I can be transactional with my truck. I can change the oil, put the right gas in it, follow a good maintenance schedule, and it'll probably go 250,000 miles. People aren't that way. They don't even make it 2 days. They have feelings. They have thoughts. They're going to affect their wills, going to affect their want-tos. And so let's talk for a minute about what keeps leaders enthused. And I think there's three things. I think number one is a good mission statement, which is really just a good why. And then the second thing I'm going to talk about is a good value, a good vision statement. And I know a lot of people think these are the same thing, but I'm going to tell you why I don't think they're the same thing. And then a cluster of what we're going to call good value statements within the life of your church. And You know, what Jason just said about charisma is so important, because I see people do these things, but they don't do them in a way that enthuses me. And I think, well, you're missing the whole point, because if these things don't enthuse anybody, that's the whole purpose of these things. So to me, a vision statement is what everybody in the house is about, everybody. So for us at Faith Family Church, we're not here to see through people. We're here to see people through. That's our vision statement. We've said it different ways. We said celebrate God, champion people, you know, but at the core, our vision statement's always been based on Luke 14, where Jesus said the church should be a place where poor people become rich through the insight and ministry they receive, where crippled people find healing, where lame people find strength to walk into their dreams, where blind people see God really is the answer to life. I mean, if our church isn't that, I don't want to be a part of it, right? So that's our mission, but a vision's different. And to me, every leader of at least a department should have a vision statement that's different than the mission statement of the church. So, for instance, when Jeffrey was our student pastor, his was igniting faith in our next generation. Our children's pastor's is developing godly foundations incredible futures can be built on. But every operations pastor, maybe, I don't know what it is, but maybe it's all things done decently and in order. I don't know. But that's, to me, how mission and vision statements work together. And then value statements just talk about what you're going to value as an organization. And they don't all have to be, you know, warm and fuzzy or, you know, put goosebumps on me. Because to me, value statements are what you use when you're training your staff. You know, when something's going on, you say, hey, you got done with that meeting, but Jason said recently he put people have to have fun with you before they get things done with you. That would be a value statement to me, that you watch the meeting. You say, hey, can I just talk about that meeting? Because people have to have fun with you before they get things done with you. And those are the things that create the culture of your leadership. So, Jeffrey, you really helped us work on ours. You want to talk about this for a minute?
Yeah, I'll say something real quick. So the statements you talked about, you talked a lot about mission and vision, but I'll piggyback talking about the cluster of good, what'd you call them? Good
values.
Culture statements, yeah. Value statements. There you go. So those are important, I think, to set culture. Because here's the thing, whenever you hear them, everybody agrees, like, yeah, that's what we want. Right. So for instance, we had something like, man, we choose joy. Everybody that's in a pretty like stable place is going to agree, like, yes, I want to work at a place where we choose joy. We had another one that said, like, we dream big, but we start small. Everybody would be like, yes, like, I want to dream big, but okay, like, what do we have right now that we can work on? We had one that's like, we develop people. We don't just dump or delegate. And so it was this idea that everybody could agree on, like, yes, that's what I want to be a part of. The fun thing about those is you can say you want to be a part of them, but something can happen. Let's take We Choose Joy. Something happens where you don't want to choose joy anymore. Well, now all of a sudden, these culture statements kind of function as like a standard that holds the culture we all agreed that we wanted. So there are so many times I was leading a meeting, and I'm the good example in this one. There are many times I was the bad example, but there are many times I was leading a meeting and, you know, one of the people that reported to me would come and they'd be all mopey and blah, 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 and this, that, and the other. And it was so easy to just be like, hey, we choose joy. Remember? And then it would just instantly shift the environment and the vibe of the room. Cause it's like, oh yeah, no, that's the culture we are. And so if you have these right, it really can both enthuse people, but also kind of create some sort of language of accountability. And it's like language you use around the house, because culture is easy to set. It's really hard to keep. And having that language you can fall back on doesn't help you just set culture. But if you use it kind of around the house a lot, then it helps you keep culture as well, which in my opinion is much harder to do.
Yeah. You know, when you get old, one of the things that happens as you get older is you realize how dumb you are. You know, you look at all the things that you look back and you say, man, I wish I'd done this way. And I can tell you that for a lot of lead pastors, I'm looking forward to this stage of life because I'm going to be lovingly bold in this season of life, because I don't want to let people make mistakes. And I can't tell you the number of pastors I know who lost their joy when it came to ministry. And they didn't even realize that it was like a cancer in their entire organization. And then they start looking for joy in something else. And then you get a moral failure. You get an iniquity living on in somebody's life because they really didn't know how to find their joy in the Lord. And what's the scripture? You don't serve him in gladness, then you'll serve your enemy, which is what ends up happening, you know. But that's one of the things I'm looking forward to most in this season of life is just being able to help people spot the little things that turn into big things in their life. And value statements do that in an organization. But what you said is really good. I mean, it's easy when you're not the big dog, you know, but when you're the lead pastor, you have to be laughing and thanking people for calling those things out in you, you know, and you did a good job in that, Jeffrey, because I'd see your team, you know, you guys would all be laughing about it because you all struggled with different ones, you know, but you were just kind of, you were holding on to it together. So, Jason, what do you want to say about this?
Yeah, this is a big deal. It's kind of one of my strong suits. I would tell the leaders watching this, make sure that these are more than just a poster on your wall or like a laminated card in your conference room. You know, that this needs to be something that is lived. It's lived loudly and it is lived consistently. You know, disseminate. I think the saying goes, dissemination of information enables transformation. So we want to be constantly keeping these things out in front of people. So how are you transmitting these values, these statements, these mission, vision statements to your congregation? Is it spoken from the stage? Is it in a pre-service video? Is it on, you know, like wall art? How do you communicate these things? So when people come in, it is very clear what you stand for, where you're going, and the kind of people that are going to go there with you. You know, think critically about how you can consistently transmit these things to your people so that they're more than just a curated phrase that has no, I would call it no organizational teeth, you know? Because like, I'm sure for you guys, if somebody was consistently not choosing joy, then there's going to be a conversation. If they continue to not consistently choose joy, then there might be another conversation. And because you guys are both baseball players, if there's a third strike of them not choosing joy, I imagine that they are out. But if there's no teeth, then it's like, hey, you know, that's just Bill. Bill's mopey. You know, that's just who Bill is. Well, it's like, well, Bill doesn't fit the culture. So maybe Bill needs to get off the bus so that he's not taking somebody's seat who needs to be on the bus. So, you know, if you're not willing to fight for it, then people won't go, they won't go with it. So for us, those things are very critical. You know, we have, it's probably a 40-foot long mural that says, make heaven crowded. We end every service because that's our mission statement. Our mission is make heaven crowded. So we end every service. You know, I ask the church, what's our mission? And I say, let's go out there and the whole church says, make heaven crowded. And so that is who we are. We're an evangelical church. We're unapologetically evangelical. We make no bones about it. You know, that's kind of a curse word in today's society, that word evangelical. But it's like, what else are we supposed to do? Go into all the world, preach the gospel, make disciples of all men, baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. You know, I've found that whatever a person says first and whatever a person says last is critical. Well, those were the last words of Christ, so I think it's pretty critical. So we don't play games with it, and we make no bones about it. So it's like, how are you consistently bringing that information about who you are, where you're going, and who's going to go there with you? How are you doing that to your church to help them get there? You know, Gen Z, I just saw this. Gen Z, so like, I think the number was something crazy, like six, I think. Your generation, Pastor Jim, is going to work six jobs in their adult life, where Gen Z is going to work between 20 and 40. So this is so critical for us to do in the church right now to capture the momentum and the heart, the zeal, the goodness inside of this generation. We've got to consistently help them remember why they're here with us. Why they came here in the first place, why they joined this team, and why they're coming to our church, so that they'll stay. Otherwise, they just disappear.
Well, there's so many options to disappear too in today's world. I mean, church was a staple when I grew up, you know, and our generation really got the leaving of church. We were the ones that really did it. I mean, 69% of adults were raised in church. Only 31% are still there. And so that's what Gen Z saw. They didn't see staying in the marriage, staying in the church, staying in everything. They just saw, hey, if something more attractive is out there, just go, job, whatever it is, you know. So that's interesting. Well, we're going to hit these last two a little bit quicker. But again, I think they're really important that if you want to start a wave of leadership, you exhibit trust, you engage the right leaders, you don't take enthusiasm for granted. And then number four, they establish plans. Now, this isn't the most sexy part of leadership. I get that. But here's the reality that desires stay intentions until a lot of disciplined action brings them to pass, you know? And that's the purpose of planning, is to turn intentions into discipline so stuff comes to pass. And Habakkuk 2, the Lord answered me and said, write down a vision, make it clear on tablets so that anyone who reads it may run. So not just talk about running, not just be in a boardroom and get inspired, but really running. And I appreciate intuitive leadership. I mean, it's essential that somebody can see things in the moment and change on the moment at times and do things. But I've sat in so many meetings where people would be talking about things they didn't have the resources or the ability or anything to accomplish, which is good because you might accomplish it 20 years from now. But still, at the end of the day, you got to say, what are we going to do today to move this forward? And so I'm just going to give you the components of our planning system real quick that I think are important. Objectives, what are our clear targets, OKRs. They focus us on doing the right things today to hit those targets. Action plans, lists of activities we're going to give ourselves to that bring vision to pass and how much time they take. Ideal weeks, they keep us balanced and working on the right things at the right time of the day. Job descriptions, they ensure everything gets done. Org charts, they show the alignment of our leaders. Teams list, they show how many team members we need, doing what. Budget, show us how the money's spent. Event schedules, establish the spirit of an organization. But again, I know that's not like the most sexy thing in the world, but if you read Good to Great, it's not always the most charismatic leaders who get the most done. It's the people who execute at the end of the day. So Jason, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is critical. You know, I heard it said it's a leader's job is to help people know what to do, how to do it, why they should do it, and the obstacles that'll be in their way to getting the job done. For us in our leadership pipeline, it's become so tricky because we have about 1,800 people who are gathering in four different churches in 12 different services across over 200-mile radius, all with 12 full-time staff members. So almost everything we do is happening through our dream teams. So what we were doing organically, we had to do strategically. And our whole model is kind of predicated on identifying, recruiting, and discipling as many leaders as possible in as short of a time frame as possible. So one of the things we're working on hard right now, and it's almost done, it's awesome, is digitizing everything so that it can be more scalable. And we've got a great team, highly motivated, but it's so cool to see how some of these things now with technology, the way that it is, using things like Google Classroom and some other checks and balances that you can have to make sure they're actually doing it, how it enables you, instead of them rotating their world around the church will rotate its world around them, and it enables them to do it on their own pace without, you know, gathering once a week around a class time. They can do it, you know, at 11 o'clock at night, 8 a.m. in the morning, and it can help us to establish these things you're talking about, grow the leader so that they can help us, you know, grow the church.
So you're saying like your leadership classes you do in Google Classroom?
Yeah, we call it Cornerstone Leadership University. It's all on Google Classroom. We hit our values. We hit eight things of what it looks like to be a leader inside of our church and how they can translate that outside of the church. That's 201. And then 301 is the system. So like, how do you schedule someone in Planning Center? What, you know, how do we schedule team? You know, just the systems and specific systems and strategies inside of our church. But yeah, it's like a 101 is values, 201 is leadership, and then 301 is systems.
Yeah, that's really good. Jeffrey, what do you want to add to that?
I'll be quick because I know we're trying to be quick, but I just, more than anything with planning, I like that it makes you focus. If you're trying to win everywhere, you're not going to win anywhere. And a lot of times, you know, especially with the way ministry works, like something can come across your desk and it's a good idea, but it's not what we're going to focus on right now. I recently started using Michael Hyatt's Full Focus Planner. I used to use a Daytimer, but the thing that I love about Michael Hyatt's Full Focus Planner is he says, okay, before the year starts, write down for yourself 10 goals. Like, this is what I want to see happen. And then all of the planners only come in 3 month increments. So you have 10 goals, but then he says, now this 3 months, this 90 days, pick three of those goals that you're going to work on. And the whole purpose is I'm going to get so focused in my planning because I need to know where my energy is going to go. I can try to do a million things at once and I might do a mediocre, or I'm going to be really planned, really thought out, think through it in a 12-month scheme, but also a 90-day scheme. And I'm going to statistically, he shows you before you use the planner, like, this is the way to get more done. And I think it's funny. And in one of those books, it might be Primal Leadership, it might be Good to Great, but he tells this parable of, he calls it the hedgehog principle. But basically, there's this fox and there's this hedgehog. And the fox is so good at so many things. He's cunning, he's sly, he's fast. And the hedgehog's not any of that, but he's great at one thing. He's great at rolling up like a ball. And the point is, every time the fox tries to get the hedgehog rolls up and becomes spiky. And so no matter that the fox is pretty good at a lot of things, the hedgehog is great at one thing, and the hedgehog always wins. And the whole point is, stop trying to be mediocre at a lot of things, or even pretty good at a lot of things. Know what you're great at, plan for it, stick to it, and be great at it. And so I think that's my favorite part of planning, is that it helps you do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I, you know, for me, a lot of times people have a hard time getting people to do planning. And you need to realize that if you're going to start bringing planning into your system. But quite frankly, every discipline you start is hard. You know, sometimes our people will say, man, I had to clean up my ministry team list. And I'll laugh at them and I'll say, well, how many people do you know who start in January saying they're going to work out and by February they're not? So why are you surprised when somebody signs up for ministry and they're not serving a month from now? I mean, anything that's a discipline is going to, you're going to have to stay on it. But the reality is, when you can show people this is going to make your ministry life more productive, it's going to make your personal life more productive, that's when the buy-in comes. The buy-in of discipline always comes whenever you see the value of it. I don't want to do it, but I want the results of it. That's whenever disciplines get engaged in. The other thing that it does, honestly, is, and this is just comes from a guy who's done this a long time, but let's just say that you play for the New York Yankees and the team wins a World Series this year, but you bat 225 as a shortstop. Enjoy your ring, because you're not going to be back next year. Yeah. They're going to find somebody new. And so planning just keeps that kind of, it makes things clear, that the objectives are clear, what people believe they can do is clear. And for you as a leader, it just makes keeping a culture of accomplishment, celebration. Obviously, you have to watch it, because discipline can drive you. It can feel like the law. You know, you want to celebrate it. You want to make it like grace. But now, I'm a big believer in planning. Here's my final thing, and that is, successful leaders exit their positions well. And, you know, this might just be for one or two people out there, but, you know, fathers don't compete with their sons. You know, if you're a father and you're competing with your son, there's something wrong with that. Because what fathers do is they cheer the next generation on for being better than they could ever be. There's nothing I did really from a capacity standpoint. There might have been from a character standpoint. I'm just being honest. I can look at my generation, look at people who have maybe greater character than young leaders. But from a capacity standpoint, I don't care if it's athletics. I don't care if it's communication. Things just keep getting better. And it's fun to just applaud how things just keep getting better. I'm just going to say this, after 35 years, I now have 6 department pastors. I have an operations pastor. I have a family ministries pastor. I have an education head of schools guy. I have a care and connection pastor. I have a women's admission ministry pastor. I did almost all of those things to some capacity in the early days, except the women's ministry. I never did the women's ministry, but I did almost all those things. Now I'm just a coach of those things. And if you're doing the same action plan every single year as a leader, stop. Because our job is to keep working ourselves out of a job. It's to exhibit trust, it's to engage the right people, it's to enthuse their hearts, is to establish a good mojo that causes them to do well at what they do. And then it's to exit your position, start all over, and let people just continue to grow and continue to develop. So that wraps it up on my end. Jeffrey, anything you want to say about that?
I don't have a ton. I'm absolutely not at the stage where I'm thinking about my replacement because I just turned 30. So I don't even know if what I would say, I probably wouldn't listen to it if I was listening to me. But I will say, on the other side, you say fathers don't compete with their sons. I mean, you're literally my dad. And I can just tell you know, there have been so many times, you know, I've preached a sermon or something, and the predominant look on your face is just like joy and celebration. And I can tell you, like, seeing that, not that you'd never say like, hey, you came across, you know, too harsh on this point or whatever, we need that. But it wasn't like the predominant thing that I was receiving from you. The predominant thing I was receiving you was, you know, joy and encouragement and celebration. And just as a young guy, that keeps gas in the tank. That makes you want to keep going. To see somebody that you admire what you just did is a huge, you know, like, oh man, all right, well, I can do this then. It builds faith in you. And so I would just say you've been a great example of that. And for any maybe older, wiser pastors listening out there, I don't have any advice on the older standpoint, but I can tell you from a younger standpoint, that does put a lot of gas in the tank when you celebrate people. So that's probably all I'd have to say.
Thank you, because I can say as a dad, nobody's perfect, and it means a lot to have people who appreciate your efforts. So, so Jason, how about you? What do you want to say to wrap things? I mean, you can go any direction you want to, really.
I'm weird because I'm like almost 40, so I'm not at the young guys table anymore. I'm not at the old guys table yet, so I'm kind of in the middle.
Your glasses are too cool to be at the old man's table.
Not at the old guy table yet, for sure, but I'm creeping up there. I would encourage, you know, to kind of echo this last thought. I would say to the guys like you, Pastor Jeffrey, or anyone that's in the planting mode, or even in my stage, kind of in that middle ground, this is a word for us too. It's a word for us too, because, you know, Jocko wrote the book years ago called Extreme Ownership. It's a pretty good book, but you know, it's a worldly take on something that is a biblical principle that I would call, if I was writing it, I'd call it extreme stewardship. You know, we have to remember whose church this is. It's not ours. It's God's church. And when we remember that, you know, the purpose-driven church stuff, Rick Warren from ages ago, is so true even to this day. We've got to be built on a mission, not on a personality, not on a missionary, but on a mission. And I think as we do this and we build our churches on a mission and not on a personality, on a purpose, then what we do is we do replicate ourselves. We replicate other people who are on the same mission as us. And then, God forbid, if a bus falls out of a plane and hits our car as we're driving or whatever, you know, takes us, you know, to heaven, you know, if Jesus tarries, then our churches are going to be successful, whether we're there or not. I mean, that's kind of the whole thing we're trying to build. I mean, 4 churches I'm not being broadcast in, because I've watched what happens when a leader fails. And guess what? I'm a human. I'm a human who's just a human being who, in Jesus' name, always led by the Spirit and won't make mistakes and won't fall. But as I watch all these leaders fail one after another, guys that are the largest selling and biggest churches and all of this and all of that, and then their churches that have millions, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank, and may not even exist in a month, I realize this thing is got to be built on a mission, not on a person. And so, you know, Maxwell says success without succession is failure. I believe that. And I think every good organization is built on that principle of, man, if this is built on me showing up, then maybe I need to stop showing up. Let somebody else lead. If this is something you struggle with, I'd encourage you to read a book from Liz Weissman called Multipliers.
That
looks good. Oh, it's hard. It's a hard book for me to read. It's aspirational for sure. It's aspirational. I have a shot clock now on my staff meetings. I don't get to talk for more than 15 minutes in a 2-hour meeting. So, I mean, I shut up more than I talk these days because it's like, man, I don't want to be the lid on our organization. So I don't know. That's my 2 cents.
And that's really good. I mean, I could sit here and talk about, tell me the difference in being aspirational and inspirational, but you know what? I promise these guys we're always going to be done in an hour. And I tell you that this is like your lunch appointment. All right. I'm going to bring guys I know you'd love having lunch with. So grab something you love to eat. And every couple of weeks, let's just sit, let's talk, let's find some answers. Our heart at Significant Church is that we'll see pastors reach and exceed the God-given dream he put within them. Because Ephesians 3 says that, right? That we don't just reach what we're hoping for or imagining. We go beyond what we're imagining because of how we're connected to God's power and to the right people. So we want to see people get reach and exceed their dreams. And we want to see them do it through relationships they enjoy. So that's our mission at Significant Church. I just want to encourage you that, man, if you think this would really help one of your friends, why don't you share this with them and just let this webinar do some good for them. And remember, we got all kind of free stuff for pastors. We've got webinars, we got a warehouse, and it's because we're passionate about seeing. Nobody gets compensated from Significant Church. We don't do it for money. We do it because we've got a big dream in our hearts. So, the next November is going to be all about leadership. We're going to talk about toxic leadership in the next webinar in 2 weeks. There's nothing that broke my heart more than bringing on a leader because I wanted to help people more. I wanted to see that leader harm people more. That was very, very painful. And so we want to talk about how to keep yourself from doing that. And then the last one, we're going to talk about nurturing trustworthy leaders. I was reading this week where Paul wrote to Timothy and he said, my true son in the faith. Another translation said, my genuine son in the faith. And a lot of people say they're people's spiritual fathers who really they're teachers, they're mentors. I've been mentors to people. Doesn't mean I'm a father to somebody. But for most of us, when we come to the end of our life, there's some people we want to just be a good father to. And we're not going to be everything they need. They're going to need more mentors. They're going to need more teachers. We should encourage that in their lives. But there's just something to watching your spiritual sons and daughters, man, do more than you ever did. So we're going to talk about raising up those kind of people in our houses. So it's going to be all about leadership. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for what you do. Man, knock it out of the park this weekend. You guys want to say anything in closing? Any closing? Yeah.
No, it's a great team.
It's going to be on
be
here.
A part of
Thank
it.
You.
All right. Love you guys. We'll see you. Bye-bye.